fantasy football today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Let's go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Big week here for the CBS Sports crew. Welcome to Fantasy Football Today. We're talking rankings, the top 30 players, and we also have sleepers, breakouts, and busts coming up later this week. But it's all available on the website now. We got great content for you at cbsports.com/fantasy. As you know, the product is out this week, and we're really, really excited. Make sure you're watching CBS Sports HQ this week as well. I'm Adam Azer. We got Dave, Jamie, and Heath here. Heath is back from vacation. His guns are exposed for YouTube. Looking fit over there, Heath. Welcome back.
It's funny because I had been working out a little bit before I went on vacation. The only workout I did on vacation was 12-ounce curls. And that must have been good for my arms because you've noticed now and you didn't notice before.
Well, I don't know. It's a very revealing shirt you've got. And we're on video. You go to youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday and you can start watching us. What's up, Dave?
Hey, dude. How are you?
Great. Jamie, what's up?
How you doing, bud?
Does your shirt say go away?
Yeah, it's an Oscar the Grouch shirt.
Oh, all right. Well, that's very welcoming for our YouTube audience.
All right, for you.
Here's what we're going to do. It could be a longer show today. We're going to talk about 30 players. The case for, the case against, and a little bit of discussion. Let's knock out some news and notes real quick. Sony Michel recovering from foot surgery in May. He had the 9th most carries in the NFL that last year. Didn't have a very good year. Tennessee working toward a long-term deal with Derrick Henry, and Antonio Brown is not going to go to jail. So that's good for him. He wants to get back into the NFL. Let's briefly talk about the Sony Michel thing here. And we're welcoming you back, so you get the first word on the Patriots' backfield.
Yeah, I think right before I left for vacation, I decided, man, Sony Michel's probably being drafted too late. The Patriots are behaving like a team that wants to play good defense and run the ball about 100 times a game, and their quarterback room suggests that's probably what they should do. I thought Michel was undervalued in terms of ADP. Now it's probably appropriately valued. There's some risk there. May want to fire back up the Damian Harris as a 13th round pick talk.
Okay. Would you guys take a flyer on Darrington Evans or Damian Harris?
Evans. The problem with Harris is like Sony Michel could miss half the season and it could just be Rex Burkhead and Brandon Bolden and James White. Like we don't even know for sure that a Sony Michel injury is great for Damian Harris.
It's true. It's a good schedule though to start the year for the Patriots on the ground. They've got Miami.
Yeah, but a terrible offense though.
And then Vegas.
Okay, well, without any further ado, let's promote things. And then without any further ado, we'll get into the rankings. But we have a mock draft tomorrow on Twitch. If you haven't been following us on Twitch, you're missing out. Twitch.com/FFToday. Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern. The entire CBS Fantasy crew is going to be mocking. Twitch.com/FFToday. Sleepers on the podcast. Sleepers are on Tuesday. Breakouts are on Wednesday. Busts are on Friday this week. And let's rock and roll here. Number 30. This is PPR consensus rankings. So we're averaging out the rankings for our analysts here. The number 3 running back in non-PPR, the number 2 running back in PPR last year was Aaron Jones. He is 30th in our consensus ranking. He tied with Christian McCaffrey for 19 touchdowns, total touchdowns, to lead the position. He had a great year, certainly, and he's number 30. Dave, give me the case for Aaron Jones. Heath, the case against. Jamie, you'll jump in with some discussion.
Well, he scored 19 touchdowns in 16 games in 2016. That's a pretty good start. Packers offense is a good one. Offensive line is good. Some say they've improved it after getting rid of Bulaga right tackle. He's not going to be the only running back in that backfield, but he's going to be the best one. He is a capable pass catcher. It remains to be seen if he can be a good volume receiver when Devontae Adams is on the field with him. And speaking of Devontae Adams, he's really the only receiver that Green Bay has. Who's their number 2 guy? It could be Alan Lazard. Jay Sternberger might step up. But Aaron Jones might be asked to shoulder plenty of work. He's in a contract year. Maybe he balls out one more time, gets that touchdown per game average high. One per game has been pretty good for him over his last however many games that he's been on fire and in that role for the Green Bay Packers. So I understand why people want to draft him, and I understand why he's in our top 30 here in our consensus rankings.
Heath?
Yeah, weird thing me being against, because I think I'm the high guy on Jones. But listen, he's going to lose at least a third of his touchdowns from last year. He could lose even more. The back they added, A.J. Dillon, profiles as a short yardage guy. Jamal Williams was used a lot in the passing game. Jones didn't see very many targets except for the games that Davante Adams missed. So there's regression coming, probably in both workload and efficiency. I guess that's the case against him.
Jamie, where do you stand?
I'm not going to have a lot of stock in Aaron Jones. I think just, you know, the addition of A.J. Dillon, the fact that the touchdowns will come down, the majority of his receiving production came when Davante Adams was out. So to me, this just, it's too costly for what I think the problems could be for him.
Who is going to have a lot of Aaron Jones? Real quick follow.
Me. Well, me if he's available in the third round.
I think he's okay as a third round pick. It might be a little bit more. I am 29th in my PPR rankings. I think he's okay there. But the addition of Dillon kind of says a bunch of things, right? Because this is a big physical back who's like Derrick Henry and could literally step into the role of short yardage goal line touchdown vulture. And that would crush Aaron Jones.
All right. Well, he's had 11 games in his career with 15 or more carries in every game. All 11. He scored 14 or more non-PPR fantasy points. That's just tremendous. He's a stud when he gets the work. Number 29 is Mike Evans. He was the number 8 wide receiver in non-PPR, number 14 in PPR, but you know he only played 13 games, had a really, really good season. Jamie, make the case for Mike Evans, who we're seeing kind of creep in our drafts anyway. Sometimes he creeps toward the back end of round 3, and he's 29th in the consensus rankings.
I think the fact that he's going to have probably some better quarterback play, it may not be better downfield throws, but better quarterback play just in general. They'll have the ball a little bit more because of the lack of turnovers from Jameis Winston. You know, if they're going to stay in 12 personnel and going to have just him and Chris Godwin as the two receivers on the field, I think it's going to significantly help his target share. And I think, you know, the value to me is the best part about Mike Evans. The fact that you can get him in round 3, for a guy that has the ability to be double digits in scores, as he's proven to be. He could still be, you know, I think in the 90 catch range, has 1500 yard potential, you know, just based on what this offense for Bruce Arians can put out there. So, he's a very good value pick. You know, the problem will be is, as we've seen from him, if he doesn't get you to 10 plus touchdowns, then that's where he tends to let you down.
Dave against Mike Evans.
Well, it's hard to be against him because his production's been so good. He's had over 1,000 yards every year of his career. And over his career, he's averaged 9.28 targets per game. He's failed to get 9 targets per game just twice. So he's gotten a lot of volume. But I went back and looked at Tom Brady's entire history of throwing to outside wide receivers. And of the 14 times, there have been 14 times that a receiver has averaged 9 targets per game from Tom Brady. Only once has that receiver been an outside type of receiver. And it was Randy Moss in 2007 when he set the world on fire with 23 million touchdowns. I'm concerned about Mike Evans. I'm worried that he's just not the type of, he lines up in the spot that typically doesn't get a lot of work from Tom Brady and certainly doesn't attack the middle of the field as much as everybody else in the Buccaneers offense will. I think adding Gronkowski is going to cost him in the red zone. If O.J. Howard keeps playing, he's going to cost him in the red zone. And Godwin's going to continue to take work away from him in the red zone. So I don't think I think he can get over 1,000 yards again. That would be 7 in a row. But I don't think he's getting near 8 touchdowns.
Really?
I think, though, the one thing about the offense, though, Dave, it's that's not really a Brady thing. That's an offense. That's a Patriots offense thing.
Yeah, who's the quarterback of the Bucs offense?
Yeah,
yeah, but the point would be is that the offense the Patriots ran. That's the personnel that they tried to give Tom Brady.
Well, yeah. Randy Moss played for them for several years, and he only one time got the huge numbers that, you know, come with getting that type of target.
I don't know. I mean, I think if Tom Brady had Mike Evans for 7 years, he'd probably put up good numbers.
That's the question. Is it a tendency thing or is it a personnel thing? You know, you look at Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks had a good year. He didn't have a Mike Evans year with that.
Right.
Brady.
Well, he had a Mike Evans every other year.
Yeah, but he didn't get like 150 targets. He had like 120-ish.
Right. I think, like, and that's the problem for me is they threw 630 passes last year. I would they may lose 10% of that just because they're not chasing the score and just because Tom Brady's not throwing interceptions. I would expect more rush attempts, fewer pass attempts for Tampa Bay this year. And they added Rob Gronkowski, who's the combination of Gronk and OJ Howard will probably increase their tight end target share. This is not a guy who's really consistently put up more than 75 catches. I think he's done it twice in his career. So he's going to be a little bit behind in terms of that. I think Brady can throw the ball downfield just fine. Mm-hmm. I just don't think if they are a good team like we expect them to be, he's going to spend very many plays dropping back and holding on to the ball for 4 seconds and taking a chance of somebody hitting him. And Evans doesn't do a lot around the line of scrimmage.
All right, let's lump these next three wide receivers together. 28, 27, and 26 in the consensus PPR rankings are Tyler Lockett, who was 13th in PPR last year, but he was a top three wide receiver, I believe, before he hurt his leg in week 10, I want to say. Juju Smith-Schuster, obviously coming off a terrible year, but great in 2018. His fantasy point total in 2018 would have made him the number two wide receiver in 2019. And Adam Thielen is 26. So it's Tyler Lockett, Juju Smith-Schuster, Adam Thielen. Jamie, let's have everybody rank those three. We'll go Jamie, Heath, Dave. How would you rank Lockett, Juju, and Thielen?
Juju, Thielen, Lockett.
Heath.
Juju, Thielen, Lockett.
Dave.
The exact opposite. Lockett, Thielen, Juju.
Okay, yeah, I know, Dave, you're a little low on Juju if you want to start the conversation there. Yeah, why don't we do that? You have some concerns about a guy who had 1,400 yards and 7 touchdowns on 162 targets 2 seasons ago with Antonio Brown.
It's pretty good. And that he had it because Antonio Brown was drawing a lot of tight coverage or defenses were playing zone and he was gobbling it all up. And I don't want to be the guy that dislikes Juju. I like Juju. I just like the other guys a little bit better. I still think he's going to get a good target share. He's going to – listen, last year he tied for the team lead in targets per game in a terrible year for the Steelers. It's not happening again. He's going to lead the team in targets again. Roethlisberger looks like he's getting better, so I can't make the case saying that Roethlisberger is going to be a huge problem and that's going to cost Juju again in 2020. I just think that there's more mouths to feed, and it's going to continue to hurt Juju. Almost the same thing as Mike Evans, where there's more red zone threats. There's more people who are going to get looks from Ben Roethlisberger. It's not going to be Juju for 10 targets per game. He's going to get around 8 targets per game, and that's still pretty good. I think he can get you over 1,000 yards. I think he can get you about 6 touchdowns.
Heath, talk about the other guys here, Thielen and Lockett, and you know you like Juju better than them, but you go Juju, Thielen, Lockett, same with Jamie. Thielen, we have some target concerns, like probably with Lockett too. So I'm assuming that's the deciding factor for you. You probably project a lot more targets for Juju.
Yeah, I mean, I think like Thielen, there are multiple concerns, and I go back and forth. I think I've moved him almost every time I've changed my rankings just because he is on the wrong side of 30. He was hurt for most of last year. We haven't seen him have great success without Stephon Diggs drawing the number one corner in most situations. He's used to playing a lot of slot routes, and I don't know if it's going to be him playing in the slot or Jefferson. But for the most part, yes, for Lockett and for Thielen, it comes down to these were two of the most run-heavy teams in the NFL. Russell Wilson has talked a lot about Seattle throwing the ball more, but I would think if they were going to throw the ball more, they would have brought in someone to fill in at running back other than Carlos Hyde, who's not exactly a great pass-catching back. They don't have that on their roster. So there's also a little bit of concern with Lockett. I don't think there's any reason to rank DK Metcalf ahead of Tyler Lockett or to draft DK Metcalf ahead of Tyler Lockett. But there's a 30% chance this year that DK Metcalf's the number one and Tyler Lockett's the number two.
Jamie, these three guys...
Thielen's only 29, by the way.
What's that?
Thielen's only 29. He's not on the wrong side of 30 yet.
Okay.
Okay. He looks old. Lockett, Juju, Thielen, how many of these guys do you see as league winners?
Zero.
Juju's good for sure.
Well, a league winner?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he could be a 1,500-yard, 10-touchdown guy.
They all could be league winners. I'm not drafting them thinking that they're going to be the ones that pull me into the fantasy.
I would have no problem if all three are my number one receiver this year.
That's a better way to put it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're going to be the reason. They're not going to. It's not like.
Well, I mean, you know, if Juju does what.
Just take the playoffs.
If Juju does what we were talking about him doing last year, which I think he's still capable of doing, then he can be a league winner because we were drafting him as a top five wide receiver last year.
I think the really interesting thing with, and the reason I said Juju and not the other two, Pittsburgh has a great defense, and they might just continue to be more run heavy like they were last year. But we think that happened because Ben was gone. If Ben Roethlisberger comes back and they're all of a sudden a 600 pass attempt team again, then Juju has top two or three wide receiver upside. I don't really think that Thielen and Lockett have that same upside.
You know, I think one thing, though, we keep saying great defense for some of these teams and bad defense for some of these teams. Great defense doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing for the offense, though, because they're going to have the ball more. So, you know, with what could be a bad run game for the Steelers, because we've seen them be a bad running team for, you know, the last 2 years, essentially, by comparison to where they were. I think that just, you know, short area throws, you know, more times where Roethlisberger is looking for Juju because he's going to line up in the slot. So I think it's not necessarily a bad thing that their defense is good.
Right. How was the Saints defense last year?
It was good.
Yeah.
Michael Thomas too.
All right. Let's move on. Number 25 is Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the rookie, the last pick of round one of the NFL draft. Jamie loves Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Is anybody nervous about taking him 25th overall? Does that feel like, I know Jamie'd be thrilled to get him 25th overall. Does anybody feel like that would be too early for Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
I would not take him there.
I would. I'd be fine with it.
Heath, what are your concerns?
I'll have fun making a case against Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The concern is the same thing that the concern is for all the rookies. We're going into a very unique season. And with the Chiefs, I fully expect Damian Williams going to start week one. And when Damian Williams has been healthy as a part of this Chiefs offense, he's been very good. I don't think we get to a situation unless Williams gets hurt or is just bad, like has gone over the hill without us knowing it. I don't think we get to a situation where Williams is getting fewer than 10 to 12 touches per game. And that puts a little bit of a cap on Clyde Edwards-Helaire's ceiling, as well as there is some risk that he gets to camp and struggles with something the Chiefs want him to do. And he's just not somebody you can start early in the year.
And Jamie, you see league winning upside for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I'm not saying he doesn't, but it's what entices you with him.
I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry.
You see league winning upside here.
Yes, I do. I mean, I think you're going to see him get the majority of the touches, and then that's not going to be a consistent 20-plus touch guy on a week-to-week basis because Damian Williams will have a role. And if he's out, I think the other guys that are there, whether it's Thompson or Darrell Williams or whoever still makes the roster, will also have a role as well. But I think he's going to get the high-level touches that we talk about. I think he's going to be the one significantly being used in the passing game. I think he's got the chance to score 10 plus touchdowns if he does get 15 plus touches on a week-to-week basis. So I'll draft that type of upside. I think he's the type of guy that is a league winner. Yeah. So I think he's the type of player that you can draft and start on a week-to-week basis. And it may take 2 or 3 weeks. I don't think it's going to be Miles Sanders where it's, you know, week 11 that it happens. But I think, you know, by week 3 or 4, we could see him as the best running back in Kansas City, one of the best running backs in fantasy.
All right, we're going to lump our next two together. 24 and 23 in the rankings are Calvin Ridley and Kenny Golladay. Ridley played only 13 games. He had 866 yards and 7 touchdowns, and he actually had just 2 fewer catches than Kenny Golladay, who had, in 16 games, 65 catches, just under 1,200 yards and 11 touchdowns, and he was on pace for 1,280 yards and 14 touchdowns with Matthew Stafford in 8 games with Matthew Stafford. And he led the NFL, by the way, Kenny Golladay, in targets inside the 10-yard line. Dave, who do you like better, Ridley or Golladay?
I like Golladay better, especially in non-PPR. And that's probably going to be an unpopular opinion on the podcast, but I like what he's capable of doing in the Lions offense, and he's proven it now. He proved it in spurts a couple of years ago, and then last year he just went all out, and he even did it without Matthew Stafford at quarterback. He's a deep ball threat. He's a red zone threat. He can make plays after the catch. He can definitely get a lot of volume from week to week as well. And I believe that Kenny Golladay can finish this year as a number one fantasy receiver. I think Ridley can too. I think Ridley's going to be in a great position. You know, we talk about, you know, not having to face double teams. Ridley's not going to have to do much of that. And I know that he's progressing in the right direction as far as a third year receiver who's got a lot of potential, matched his numbers from his rookie year in fewer games last season. So I like both these guys. I'd love it if these were my round two and round three picks on draft day.
Does anybody want to make the case for Calvin Ridley ahead of Kenny Golladay?
Yeah, in PPR, I would. I just worry. Like, I don't know that Golladay really has much of a chance of, like, I Ridley could get 130 targets with Julio Jones playing 16 games. I don't know what the chances are of Galladay getting that, and his catch rate's always been so low that he's just probably not going to be an 80 catch guy unless he gets a ton of targets. In non-PPR, I agree with Dave. I would actually take Galladay over Ridley, but in PPR, I'll take Ridley.
Jamie, I want to give you a stat. Tell me what you think for Calvin Ridley. So he had a great year, but it wasn't just when Sanu left. It was when Hooper and Sanu were both out. Three games without Hooper and Sanu, he got 34.4% of his targets, 36.8% of his yards, 28.6% of his touchdowns in 23% of his season. So there was a three-game stretch after the Sanu trade without Austin Hooper. That's when Calvin Ridley went bananas. But when it was just no Sanu and Hooper was in, he wasn't nearly as involved and he wasn't as good. Does that matter to you as they've replaced Hooper with Hurst in theory, but obviously they haven't replaced Sanu. Does that matter to you?
No, I just think he's a good player that's ascending. And I mean, look, Hurst has had an injury problem in his career, so that's something you got to keep in mind. You know, so if he's out for any stretch and Russell Gage does not step into the Sanu role, as at least that's going to be his opportunity right away, then Ridley has the chance to, you know, be a significant contributor. But I just think he's shown you enough that he's got the potential to take that next step in his third year to be one of these third year breakouts. You know, I look at what like our, I don't know what Heath has him projected for. Our projections have him for, 77,009. I wouldn't be surprised if the yards and maybe even the touchdowns are better than that. You know, so he's just got so much upside. And, you know, after the Sanu trade, before he got hurt, so there was a 6-game span that they both played together. And as you referenced, Adam, Hooper was hurt for part of that, but he outscored Julio Jones in that 6-game stretch, you know, so he was their guy, in terms of production. And then Julio just blew up in the final three games when Ridley was out. The thing that I think both these guys sort of are great upside plays. And, you know, if you want to keep using the phrase league winners, they're going to throw the ball so much. They just have shown you that last year was, you know, Detroit's sort of, okay, we're going to open up the offense a little bit. Ben's talked about this, Ben Gretsch, about how the receiving targets, the players they're catching passes from Matthew Stafford changed post Calvin Johnson to what we saw, I guess, you know, Galladay. And obviously the Falcons as well. They led the NFL in pass attempts last year. So these are guys that you gravitate toward. You know, they're both young. They're both high upside plays. They're going to score a lot of touchdowns. And if the catches can ever get to the 80 plus range, they're going to be dominant forces.
And there's nothing either of them can't do on the field.
Well,
that's the other huge thing. We can talk about other receivers that probably not in the top 30, but guys who maybe aren't red zone threats. Maybe they're only big play threats. Both of these guys are big play threats and red zone threats for their teams.
Yeah, there's kind of an underrated stat that we, and we're not going to talk about it now. I just want to give it out, though. We talk about the Bucs defense improving, how they got better second half of the year. The Falcons defense, the first 8 games of the year, they went 1-7. They gave up 31 points per game. The last 8 games of the year, they went 6-2. They gave up 18.6 points per game. But they still were throwing the ball more than 40 times per game. Maybe it's because they didn't have a run game. But it is something interesting, something to keep an eye on here. Heath, let's talk about Josh Jacobs. He's an interesting player. He was 14th in non-PPR. He was 21st in PPR last year. He was a workhorse. He dominated near the goal line, but he only had 20 catches in 13 games. Josh Jacobs is 22nd in our PPR consensus rankings. Make the case for Josh Jacobs.
This is right about where I have him. It's nice to know that assuming he plays 16 games, he's probably going to be relatively close to 300 carries. They did not really spell him too much in the running game. I would expect the Raiders offense is going to be a little bit better this year with all the weaponry that they added. That will give him a chance to score a few more touchdowns. He is, I think, pretty good when they throw him the football. They've just got way too many other pieces that are good at those types of routes. So I don't think they're going to, but if they ever give him a chance in the passing game, he has the ability. He showed it just a couple times last year to break those big plays on one target. So there's some receiving game upside, even if there's not a lot of target upside.
Dave, the case against Josh Jacobs.
In PPR, he can't be viewed as a number one fantasy running back. He just doesn't catch the ball enough. I think the addition of Bowden and the re-signing of Rashard kind of tells you what the Raiders want to do. They don't want to put too much work on Josh Jacobs' plate. They want to use him certainly as a ball carrier, and he is going to be their featured back. But if he's not catching 35 plus passes, what are his chances of finishing as a top 12 running back? He's going to need to score a ton of touchdowns. I don't know if we can count on him for that. In non-PPR, he's there. There's no question. He was 10th in fantasy points per game in non-PPR last year, 15th in PPR. Schedule also gets hard starting in week two. And I'm still not sold on the Raiders' defense or their pass game taking big steps forward. Jacobs, I think, can still take a good step forward. I don't know if it's going to be two steps forward. It might just be one. I'm nervous to use him in PPR.
So, Jamie, we see Jacobs at 22. Miles Sanders is top 12 in the consensus rankings, I'm pretty sure. And is it just the passing game? Is that basically what separates them to the catch?
Yeah, I think so. I do think that Jacobs will rush for more yards than Sanders. He'll probably have an opportunity to score more touchdowns on the ground than Sanders, but Sanders will do more total yards and should do more in the passing game. But I mean, if Jacobs were to get, 10 to 15 more catches, he could be an absolute, absolute monster. You still got to factor in some of the injury concerns, from what we saw last year. I like the fact that he came back when the Raiders were still in playoff contention and fought through the shoulder injury, but will he, have to get shut down at any point if they're out of contention like we saw last year where they were trying to, maybe baby him a little bit. But it's a very good offensive line. I do think that the passing game, I understand Dave's, concern that it's maybe not going to be great, but it should be better. If Henry Ruggs is, as advertised. So there's a lot to like about what this offense could be. And a lot of, Vegas is certainly telling you that they expect the Raiders to be better. No, I guess that's a bad way of phrasing it. Bettors are telling you that, the odds are telling you that they expect, the Raiders to be better. So, if their team does improve and we see, some more situations, I go back to that Chiefs game. I think it was the first Chiefs game he left with an injury. He was having a monster first. I think he had like 99 yards in the first half. And that was when their run defense was miserable. I forget who said it, but, somebody said that, had he stayed in that game, I think it was somebody from the Chiefs, I think said, had he stayed in that game, that they probably would have pulled off the upset. Because he was having such a great performance.
Yeah, he's so awesome.
He's got a huge ceiling. It's just a matter of can he stay healthy and maybe do a little bit more in the passing.
What is the now I'm curious because I need to find a place to bet the what's the Raiders over under up to for wins?
I thought it was 7.5.
Oh,
they're like in a group of like a bunch of teams that's an improvement for them.
I wonder if them moving to Las Vegas is a factor in that. And they know
that 7 last year, right?
Las Vegas are just going to bet the over.
Did they win 7 last year?
They took a killing on when the hockey team went to Vegas and they had an over under total and everybody in town took the over. They had to pay it out.
All right. One more player here in the first 10 that we're going to talk about. It is Cooper Kupp. Interesting year for Cooper Kupp. He was the number 4 wide receiver in fantasy last year in both formats. His first 8 games, he had 87 targets. His last 8 games, he had 47 targets. Still managed to catch 5 touchdowns in those 8 games, but he basically disappeared in those 8 games. He had 1 game with more than 53 yards, no games with more than 65 yards, but of course stayed a red zone, green zone, gold zone, all zones factor for Jared Goff. So Cooper Kupp is number 21 in the consensus rankings here. And I'll throw it back to Jamie. Give me a quick case for Cooper Kupp.
Well, I mean, he's Jared Goff's best buddy, so I think that certainly helps. When they made this switch to, run, again, more 12 personnel for them when Brandon Cooks was banged up and they were struggling to run the ball, those two guys are going to be on the field, Kupp and Robert Woods, a ton. And Kupp has been such a great asset in the red zone for Jared Goff. So if this run game does struggle, if they can't, pick things up back from where they were two years ago, it's going to be a lot on the passing game. And Kupp and Robert Woods should have a big, big opportunity, along with Tyler Higbee too, but just in terms of the receivers. So Kupp is one of those guys, like, I feel very similar to Galladay and Ridley. Like, they're a little bit more touchdown dependent than they're going to be, consistently 90 plus catches. But, what Kupp has proven over the first 3 years of his career, I think is a good enough track record to show you that he belongs in this range. He is a guy you can count on as your number one receiver. And certainly has the upside to be a top 10 receiver once again.
Anyone disagree?
Nope.
No, but I could, like, the case against would be that 4 of his last 5 games, he played less than 3/4 of the team's offensive snaps. Like when Tyler Higbee went bananas, Cooper Kupp was still scoring touchdowns, but he was on the field for like 61% of the last 2 games, 28% of one of those games.
Like, I think he left.
Slot receiver, and when they went to two wide receivers, he didn't really play outside, and he may just be the outside guy when they go to two receivers now, and that may. But we've not really seen him play that role a whole lot.
Yeah, the 28% game, I thought maybe there was injury, but he definitely had the reduced snap count for sure. It was interesting. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here on Fantasy Football Today. We got 20 more players to talk about. We'll do the next 10, starting with DJ Moore, who's 20th in our consensus rankings. We'll be right back.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
DJ Moore, 15th best wide receiver in PPR last year. He played 15 games, really only played 14 games. In those 14 healthy games, on pace for 1,342 yards, only 5 touchdowns, but 152 targets. Dave, case for DJ Moore.
He's the best wide receiver on a team that's going to throw a lot of short area passes, and he's got a great catch rate to go with it. He can make plays after the catch, which is going to be a huge component of what the Panthers are going to do. And he's a really good receiver who should see a few more touchdowns go his way without his target share falling off at all.
Okay. Is there a case against DJ Moore? He's going in the 4th round, by the way, in those fantasy football calculator drafts. That was crazy.
That's a steal.
Yeah, totally. Heath, is there a case against DJ Moore?
I mean, he hasn't scored very many touchdowns so far. I would normally scream touchdown regression for a guy that had 4 touchdowns on 135 targets in 2019, but his touchdown rate last year was actually higher than it was in 2018. And they did add Robbie Anderson, who could take a larger share of the targets than Curtis Samuel did. I don't believe any of the things I just said, but that would be it.
Okay. So
he'll be the NFL in receptions.
Yeah, like, why is there such a disconnect between, you know, we've got him 20th overall, middle of round 2, and Fantasy Football Calculator ADP has him in the 4th round? What do you think people are afraid of? Or Heath, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to look and see. I wonder if that's just a Fantasy Football Calculator thing. I will look at the other sites that where people are playing for money and not practicing mock drafting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That
could factor in, you know, with some of these things, you know, it happens to our site too. You know, when you get auto drafted and if some site hasn't projected low.
Maybe. Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think it's more that, he's a 3rd round pick in best ball leagues. I think he maybe were a little higher, but it's mostly just there's some site where he auto drafts late.
Honestly, I think some people are afraid of Bridgewater. I think that they think that Teddy Bridgewater is going
which
to be
which is just player. Absurd.
It's I agree.
He was with Kyle Allen and Will Greer last year. Like,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Adam could be his quarterback, and it'd basically be the same thing as what he had last year.
No, you'd have too many off-target throws.
All right. George Kittle is next in the rankings. He's number 19, so we have a tight end here. Here's a different question here, because Kelsey is closer to the top 12. How much farther back from Kelsey should Kittle be? Jamie, how many players do you think should separate those two tight ends?
5 to 7.
Okay, that sounds about right based on our consensus rankings here. Jamie, the case for George Kittle, by the way, he missed 2 games this year. Jimmy Garoppolo threw 91 times in those 2 games, which is outrageous for him. And they were against the 2 best matchups in fantasy for tight ends. They were Arizona and Seattle. If he played those 2 games, I feel so confident he would have outscored Kelsey and been the number 1 tight end in fantasy because the matchups were great And he was basically as good or a little bit better on a per game basis than Kelce anyway. But Jamie, give me a case for George Kittle, why he should be a top 20 pick.
Well, he's the best receiving option on his team, and that's always a nice thing to have, as we saw, as we've seen from him over the last couple of years. We saw it from Gronk for a good portion of his tenure. We saw it from Darren Waller last year. He's just an athletic freak. You know, I mean, he's done it without scoring a lot of touchdowns yet. So imagine if he can get to a double digit touchdown season. I just think, you know, he's in that part of his career where he's ascending to be one of the greats at his position. I mean, I remember we had this conversation with the Mount Rushmore and the, you know, best players at their spots. You know, is Kittle going to be one of those guys that cracks that group eventually? And I think he can. There's, you know, really not much to say outside of that he's awesome in the right spot, in the right time. And if they do start throwing more, if they do, you know, struggle to run, or their defense does take a step back, and maybe some of the losses that we saw last year or Super Bowl hangover, he could be even better. As we saw, you know, his best season came, I believe, is with Nick Mullins and without Garoppolo playing, right?
Yeah, so, last year, 2018.
You know, there's just a lot to like about what Kittle can do.
And what he did last year, he did on a broken freaking ankle. And he basically averaged the same amount of fantasy points per game in PPR as Allen Robinson, who's a top 10 receiver. So you're drafting a top 10 receiver to be your starting tight end when you draft George Kittle. And he's never had more than 5 touchdowns in a single season. That's eventually going to turn, and he's going to get like
30. I think Pro Football Focus had him as the best tight end last year, best fantasy tight end last year.
Yeah, well, on a per game basis, they've
and the fact that you can get him after Kittle and draft after draft just means that that's a value.
Yeah, the only problem with that is like where they're going. You know, it's like if you want to look at it, like if you're going to draft a tight end, you probably have to make the commitment to one of the two guys at a different spot in your draft, because Kelce's toward the end of round one and Kittle's toward the back end of round two.
Right, right. All right. So the case against Kittle maybe is, look, they drafted a wide receiver in the first round, Brandon Ayuk, maybe Deebo Samuel takes a step forward. They're not a pass heavy team, but Kittle seems like a no brainer in the second round. So we've got an interesting stretch of players here after Kittle, or I guess going before Kittle. We've got 5 running backs here. Well, let's read the list. We've got Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry, Joe Mixon, and these guys are 18. Chubb is 18. this is not that hard. Chubb is 18. Henry is 17. Mixon is 16. Eckler is 15. Kenyon Drake is 14. 5 running backs there. From 14th to 18, it's actually going from best to worst. Kenyon Drake, Austin Eckler, Joe Mixon, Derrick Henry, and Nick Chubb. This is PPR. Keep that in mind. We don't expect a ton of catches from Henry or Chubb, or probably even Mixon. He had 35 last year. All right, Heath, who's your favorite of this 5?
In full PPR, it's still Austin Eckler. He was, in this format, the best of this group last year, right? And that was with Melvin Gordon playing 12 games. I don't believe that Joshua Kelly or Justin Jackson are going to get the same volume that Eckler did. Eckler will see his targets come down a little bit because the Chargers aren't going to throw as much. But Tyrod Taylor is not your typical running quarterback who doesn't throw the ball to running backs. Last time he was a running back, LeSean McCoy led his team in targets per game. So I still think they also do a lot of things with Austin Eckler where he's not lining up as running back on a play. He plays some snaps in the slot. They have designed pass plays going specifically to him. So it's not like a lot of his volume came solely because Phillip Rivers was dumping the ball off real quick when it was designed to go somewhere else. I still think he'll be amongst the leaders in terms of receptions at running back this year, and he'll have more rush volume than he did as well.
Dave, the group of 5 is Drake, Eckler, Mixon, Henry, Chubb. Who's your favorite?
In PPR, it's Mixon, because he's given us 1,400 total yards and 8 touchdowns on 280 touches each of the last 2 seasons. The Bengals unlocked him in the second half of last year, averaged over 17 PPR points per game in those 8 games last year. They just let him be a patient runner. They threw to him a decent amount. Their offensive line is going to be better this year. They've got Jonah Williams coming back at left tackle. That's a great start. The quarterback, it's going to be an improvement. I think Burrow is going to be just fine there. And the defense is still going to be a question mark for Cincinnati. The biggest knock that I see on Mixon going into drafts now is his schedule. It's a tough schedule for him, especially in the early going. So there could be some rough games for him. and for everybody on Cincinnati to begin the year. But talent-wise and what he's been able to give you over the last two seasons, and specifically over the last half of last season with this coaching staff, I think there's a ton to love about Mixon.
Mixon was the number four running back in the last eight games of the year. He had the most carries in the NFL. He had 33 more carries than anyone else. Nick Chubb was number two. So that's crazy. And Derrick Henry is the only running back who had more rushing yards than Joe Mixon. Jamie, who's your favorite in this group of five?
It's Mixon also. But I think, you know, they're all awesome. You know, especially if Henry can repeat what he did a year ago. You know, the question just with him is, you know, again, for me, it's health, but also can he maybe do a little bit more in the passing game? But I think, you know, Dave was spot on with Mixon. Heath was spot on with Eckler. What we saw from Drake to close the season last year was unbelievable. And, you know, Chubb can, as we saw, was neck and neck with Henry to lead the NFL in rushing. And now he gets Stefanski, who could be even more inclined to use him running the ball. The problem with him is Kareem Hunt. But I think all these guys have a chance to be, you know, again, to use your phrase, league winners. They're just in good spots. They're coming off strong performances a year ago. And, you know, if they all stay healthy, then you're going to be thrilled with getting them either late round one or early round two.
All right. You said they're all awesome, but we know how fantasy works. Not all these guys are going to end up being awesome, unfortunately. So who concerns you in this group? Again, it's Drake, Eckler, Mixon, Henry, and Chubb. Who are you guys avoiding? These, you got to invest a round two pick. Is there anyone you're saying, no, there's no way I'm drafting this guy in the second round?
Well, I mean, I'm not taking Henry at all. I'm worried about the touches from a year ago and just, you know, regression from this team as a whole. So I doubt I'll draft very much of Henry. And Chubb is the one I have ranked right above him. They're both 11 and 12 for me in PPR. Chubb would be, again, lack of receptions once Kareem Hunt was eligible to play. And if Hunt takes on a bigger role in the ground game, then that's going to hurt him too. So those would be the two I would nitpick the most, but you know, hopefully the flaws or the pros outweighs the con.
And I hate to say it with both of them because they're two of the best running backs in the NFL, right? Like, it just, and forget about all the other information that we know about them. Just when you watch them play, they're fun to watch. They're great at what they do, and in theory, they should both be around for several years. But I think Jamie's points are accurate. I've got Henry ranked ahead of Chubb in PPR. But they're fourth and fifth for me among these running backs.
Yeah, like I wouldn't say any of these guys I'm avoiding in round two. They're all in my top 17, I believe. So I would take any of them in the second round, especially the end of the second round. My least favorite is Mixon. I don't really know that he's going to catch a lot more passes than Henry or Chubb. Maybe he's going to get an extra 10 or 12 points in that regard. And I just, he's not been as good as them on the ground.
You know, Chubb.
Well, he was at the end of last year, though.
The end of last year, yeah. Look, the thing with Mixon, though, is that we forget he was terrible the first eight games. It's like everybody talks about the last eight games, but the first eight games, he averaged 3.2 yards per carry. He was
Le'Veon
Bell.
Yeah, because the coaches were trying to fit a square peg into a round hole.
It was also, you know, I mean, first eight games of a new head coach, and, you know, is A.J. Green coming back? Is he not
what
coming back?
What does that
back?
Matter? Why are we making those excuses? He was bad. Huh? He was bad, you know? Like, he was bad.
They were fundamentally using him the wrong way.
I mean, we can't sit here and say, okay, we can, Chubb was bad by comparison his last eight games when...
No, only in touchdowns. He still averaged 4.8 yards per carry. He had the second most carries in the NFL. Kareem Hunt had one carry inside the five-yard line, so Chubb
okay, but
still
statistically,
owned that role.
Chubb was worse when Kareem Hunt was on field.
Not 3.2 yards per carry. I mean, Joe Mixon was an outright horrible bust the first eight games.
But would you rather have a guy building toward the next season or fading away?
I don't think
it
matters.
Season?
No, I don't think that matters at all.
It's eight games.
I think it matters significantly. Momentum counts.
I don't expect Mixon and Chubb to be that different on a per carry basis. Like, I mean, I think they're both really good. I'm just saying, like, you can't just completely throw away the first eight games of the season.
No, they came off their bye week. They found something that worked and they rode it toward the end of the year.
Okay. How about this? I brought this up last week or 2 weeks ago. Last week it must have been. 15 carries for Nick Chubb inside the five-yard line for negative 14 yards. By far the fewest yards gained because negative 14.
I wouldn't worry about that at all.
Well, the only reason I worry about it is because they do have Kareem Hunt. So do they say maybe that's not a strength of Nick Chubb's? That's all I'm bringing up there.
I don't know. They added two pretty significant offensive linemen there. I think they're going to help that off that ground game.
And the coaching staff is completely different, so I think they're going to be able to scheme better down there.
Okay.
And if they're as conservative as we say they are, I had to get that out there, that Chubb should get plenty of opportunities inside the five again, and hopefully turns them into more touchdowns than he did last year.
Yeah. I just thought it was an interesting stat. Really don't see that kind of inefficiency. All right, we got two wide receivers in a row, Chris Godwin and DeAndre Hopkins. Godwin is 13th in our consensus rankings. He was the number two PPR wide receiver last year. DeAndre Hopkins was number five. He had a down year. He's usually 1,500 yards, 12 touchdowns. Last year, he was 1,165 yards and 7 touchdowns in 15 games. Heath, who do you like better, Godwin or Hopkins?
I like Godwin better. Obviously, both guys changing quarterbacks, but I think that the fit there with Godwin and Tom Brady is a pretty good one. He runs more of the types of routes that are closer to the line of scrimmage. He's going to play outside more if they play more 12 personnel, but he was actually better on a per target basis last year outside than he was in the slot, so that doesn't worry me at all. I'm just a little bit worried about DeAndre Hopkins, who has always been a guy that kind of needs 9 to 10 targets per game to be an elite fantasy wide receiver. And I don't know that he's going to get 9 to 10 targets per game in that Arizona offense.
Who likes Hopkins better than Godwin? Anybody?
I do.
Okay. Yeah. You like Hopkins. You're pretty bullish here.
Because the Cardinals are desperate for a guy like him. You go back and watch their games last year. They sputtered inside the red zone because they didn't have anybody who could dominate down there. And when it came to stretching the field, they didn't necessarily have guys who could do that either. And I know you don't think of DeAndre Hopkins in that way, but he did it plenty for Houston. He's just not among the elite receivers in the NFL when it comes to deep ball, but he certainly made his fair share of long catches from Deshaun Watson. And he's going to be able to do things in the red zone that Trent Sherfield and Larry Fitzgerald can sometimes do, but didn't do all the time last year. Christian Kirk, same thing. He's going to be able to step up, and that's what I'm counting on when I draft DeAndre Hopkins. I think the target share is going to go down from what he had in Houston because he was catching a third of everything in Houston. So he's not going to be quite that involved, but he's still going to be the target leader by a significant margin in Arizona. Call it 30 targets. So he'll have more than 30 targets than anybody else on the team. And I think he can get double-digit touchdowns again. This is an offense that toward the end of last year, really, well, maybe not toward the end of last year, but after the beginning of the season, that's probably the best way to put it, they really started to get going. And I think they're going to continue to progress and ultimately be one of the best offenses in the NFL. And they're going to challenge those defenses in the NFC West, and Hopkins is going to be a big reason for it.
Jamie, why do you say
30 targets more, that would put him at 135? Oh,
130 targets.
No, I'm saying 30 is a reasonable number. So that would put him 135 targets, because I think it was 105 was the target leader for them last year with Fitzgerald.
They were right around 105. Yeah. Fitzgerald and Kirk were both right around.
Right. But Kirk missed three games. So he would have probably had, you know, sure, 115. But if you just go on the numbers that they had, the only time in Hopkins' career he's ever had less than 150 targets, the only time he's been around that number, 135, it was his second year in the league. And this is his numbers, which I think is realistic. 76 catches, 1,210 yards, and 6 touchdowns. So his yards per target would go up significantly based on what we saw from a year ago. But his touchdowns would be about the same, and the catches would come down a lot. So in this offense, is that something that is attractive to you? If that's his numbers, and I'm not saying you did, but just in general, if that's what he does, is that a high second round, low first round pick?
Well, that's the thing is I've got him projected for 140 targets, but at 8
But he's never been good with less than, or never been great with less than 150 right. targets.
At his career efficiency, which is right, like for his career, right around 8 yards per target. That's right where he was last year. He's a 5% touchdown rate guy, which is pretty normal. Well, that's 1,150 yards. Jamie said 1,200, right in that range, and 7 touchdowns. And I think that's what I've got projected for is 1,150 and 7. Unless he catches 100 passes, that's just not a top 5 wide receiver.
And if he gets the same targets here that he's been getting with Deshaun Watson, that would have put him last year at 166 targets. And it would have been the second most targeted receiver in the NFL.
Right. And I don't think he's going to get that high. But I think you're talking about 7 touchdowns for him. I think that's going to be way low.
Well, so you think his touchdown rate's going to go up with Kyler Murray?
Touchdown rate's going to go up. He's going to be the top banana in the red zone for Arizona.
The touchdown leader last year was like 5.
Yeah. They need somebody who's better than 5.
Yeah, and I know Dave thinks that Kyler Murray was a little unlucky in the red zone last year, so that Dave's counting on a lot of touchdowns for Hopkins. One more guy in this group of 10, it's Travis Kelce, number 11 in our consensus ranking. He's been the number one tight end in PPR four straight seasons. He's been number one in non-PPR three of the last four. The other season, he finished number two. I think the case for Kelce is fairly easy to make. I just made it, right? Number one 4 years in a row in this format, and we have him as a top 12 player overall. What's the case against Travis Kelce, Dave?
The case against Travis Kelce. Let's just start with value on draft day. Taking him with a first-round pick when you can get Kittle in round two, it seems a little steep for Kelce. I know that he's been incredibly consistent, and he's 31, Heath? 31 or 32 years old
now? He will turn 31 this season.
Okay, so in the middle of the season. You can't discount him for that. That doesn't matter to me. I think that's where you really start if you're going to go against Travis Kelce, is that there are so many other tight ends that you can either get in round two or round three, four, or you can just wait until round eight and get one of the guys in the back half of our top 12 in our rankings, and you'll be fine at the position. It's deeper this year, so the rush to get a tight end to just solidify that spot, I don't think it's necessary to do. I honestly don't know what else there could be to say. I think he's the short area target that Patrick Mahomes prefers in that offense. Maybe Edwards-Helaire is so good that he takes some work away from Kelce inside of 15 yards, but he's a really good player and really tough to double cover. He's tough to cover just period in that offense, given all the weapons that they have.
Heath, do you have to leave or do you have time to give us a why Travis Kelce's hot garbage take?
We shouldn't waste time on that.
All right. Well, Heath has to jump off and do HQ. Dave has to do the same in about 5 minutes. So Heath, thank you for your time today.
Yep.
Sorry you don't get to talk about Miles Sanders. I'll just say what you think about Miles Sanders.
Consensus 10 is way too high.
All right. Let's get to Miles Sanders. He is number 10. And in the last six regular season games after the Jordan Howard injury, that does not include week 17, Sanders got hurt in that game. He was the number three running back in PPR, number seven in non-PPR. He had 25 catches. He had 94 carries. He was awesome. Didn't really score that many touchdowns, only four touchdowns in those six games. Not terrible, but that's, I guess, pretty good. But maybe he could have even more. All right, so is consensus 10 too high for Miles Sanders? Do either of you feel that way, Jamie or Dave?
I definitely don't.
I think it's too high just from the standpoint of there are just a few players that have probably a little bit of a higher floor. You know, Kelce is certainly in that conversation. I would take Mixon over Sanders. You know, just I think there's a higher ceiling for him from what we saw a year ago. Some of the receivers that we've talked about, I think, are a little bit safer than Miles Sanders. But he's in this conversation. I mean, he's awesome. You know, and again, I think what he showed you at the end of last year hopefully carries over this year. I just hope that they don't add somebody else still, you know, just to ruin him. I think it would be good for his ADP because you still want to draft him in this range, even if they add, let's say, a Devontae Freeman. But, you know, it's just going to be a matter of do they continue to lean on him like we saw last year. Now, last year, his reception totals, I think, were boosted a little bit because of the receivers. They're going to have healthier receivers, whether it's the rookie stepping up or Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson back. But, you know, this whole thing about Doug Peterson and using not wanting to use one guy, I think is one of the most overblown things that we've talked about over the last several years. When he's had the opportunity to use a guy, he has. I think he's been searching for a guy and he found one last year. And so I think this is the opportunity to sort of dispel that a little bit. Now, is he going to be 30 plus touches on a weekly basis? No. Is it going to be 25? Maybe that's a stretch, but 20 plus, I think, is certainly well within reach and, you know, the low 20s. And, He's a number one running back. He's in the whatever you want to, you know, put him in the five guys that we talked about previously from Mixon through Henry. You know, he's probably closer to that group than he is to the top four or top five, but he's right there, you know, and he's a borderline first round pick. I prefer him in the second round, but he's right here in this ring.
And by the way, every coach is like that, where they're going to use multiple running backs to mix and match until they find their guy. And then when they find their guy, they're going to ride that guy. It's pretty simple to me. So thank you, Jamie, for saying that. And by the way, Miles Sanders is the only running back in Doug Peterson's history with the Philadelphia Eagles that's had over 1,000 total yards in a season. And his pace last year, this is including his bad games earlier when Jordan Howard was doing his thing, his pace was over 1,500 total yards and 8 touchdowns. That's right around the average of what Michael Thomas has given you each of his last two seasons.
Yeah, but obviously with fewer catches. So if you're trying to make that decision in PPR.
Sure, that's fine.
But, you know, that doesn't mean that maybe it's obviously a positional scarcity thing, but whatever. Yeah, he wasn't that great, Sanders, at the beginning of the year. He didn't
beat out... was as a receiver.
Yeah, he was, yeah. He didn't beat out Jordan Howard. He took advantage of some very easy matchups down the stretch. I don't know. We have to make the case against. I think everybody knows how I feel about Miles Sanders.
I think what happened to Miles Sanders last year could happen to every single rookie this year, even our beloved Clyde, where they get off to a rough start because they're not used to playing in the NFL and they've got to figure things out, and they become a better player for it by the second half of the year.
Okay, give me a quick answer on this. Jamie said he has Mixon ahead of Sanders, but the consensus rankings have Sanders ahead of that group of five running backs, which was Chubb, Mixon, Henry, Eckler, or Drake. Is there any one thing that separates Miles Sanders from that group, puts him ahead of them?
Situation.
No.
Situation. Okay.
Not to mention talent. Talent's pretty damn good, too.
All right. Number nine is Tyreek Hill. And he, you know, didn't have a great year last year, but he was hurt in and out of the lineup. Played only 12 snaps in week one. So you see, he played 12 games. He really only played 11 games. We love Tyreek Hill. He's great. Jamie, what's the case against Tyreek Hill?
We saw last year he got hurt. You know, and so hopefully that doesn't happen again. Mecole Hardman has a little bit of a bigger role. Sammy Watkins still there. They throw more to their running backs because Edwards-Helaire is, a special talent, maybe comparison to Damian Williams. When we get to this point, it's just such small things that are the problems with these guys. So I don't see much downside if he plays 16 games. We saw it 2 years ago how good he could be with Mahomes. And, you know, he could challenge to be the number one receiver in non-PPR. He could be right there in PPR. He just doesn't catch a lot of passes. That's probably the worst thing about him.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. He doesn't have that safe volume, but he still finished last year 11th in PPR fantasy points per game and 18th in consistency. And I would argue that those numbers are low for him. So I think Tyreek, there's really the argument against him is that, oh, he gets hurt. That's it.
And Mahomes threw 26 touchdowns in 14 games last year. The Chiefs through something
that seems
like
low.
Yeah, like 30 to 32 touchdowns. I think Mahomes is a 40 touchdown guy. That's a big number, but he's one of the best. He's a legend already. So he threw 50 touchdowns in 2018. That's a high number, but 40 is certainly realistic. Touchdowns are going to go up for the Chiefs. Julio Jones, he was number 3 in PPR last year. He had another outstanding season, but man, Jamie mentioned it earlier. Last 3 games of the season, he had a 35.6% target share, Julio Jones. This was without Calvin Ridley. Calvin Ridley got hurt, and he went nuts. He had 378 yards and 2 touchdowns. Jones only had 6 touchdowns all year. Before that, 12 games with Calvin Ridley, Julio Jones had a 20.6% target share. So that's got to be a little concerning. Is anybody concerned about Julio Jones, 31 years old this year, 8th in our consensus rankings?
A little. But I'm still taking him as a surefire number one fantasy receiver. And I think if he hadn't have finished last year the way that he did, I'd be a little more nervous to draft Julio Jones. But he had 78 PPR points in his last 3 games. That's more than 25 per game. Proves that he can still play at a high level. And I think Atlanta is still going to throw the ball a ton. I think he's still going to be the number one guy there.
Let me ask you guys this. How many receivers do you think have a chance to be over 100 catches?
Oh, gosh. Without really thinking about it, 7.
I'd say more have a chance to. I think we'll end up with like 7 or 8. I would say Adam Thielen has a chance, probably 15.
So last year there were 4 guys who did it. Jones and Allen Robinson were just outside of it. Jones was 99 catches. Robinson was 98. I think the year before there were 8 guys that went over 100 catches in 2018. He's one of those guys that you just pencil in for 100 catches. And, when you look PPR, it's just, okay, once you get past whoever your top 2 guys may be, for me, it's Thomas and Devontae Adams. I just think of Julio Jones, like, if he stays healthy, he's 100 to 110 catches. He's, 1,300 to 1,400 yards. And unfortunately, he's kind of capped at like 8 to 9 touchdowns. If that is just the what his track record has been. Clearly, health is a problem. Maybe Ridley takes the next step, but Ridley missed time last year, and Hurst has had a hard time staying healthy. They're going to throw the ball so much that he just feels safe. And so, hopefully this isn't the year where the breakdowns or the cliff happens for receivers in their early 30s. We've seen that before. I just think he's just so good, so talented. I wish he would get 10 plus touchdowns a little bit more often, but it's hard to bet against Julio Jones.
All right, Dave, thank you for your time today, sir.
You got it, gentlemen. This was fun.
We have 7 more players. We have Davante Adams checking in at number 7. 83 catches in 12 games, 997 yards. His 16-game pace was better than I realized, I think. 111 catches, 1,329 yards, only 7 touchdowns, but 169 targets. They didn't really do anything, Jamie, to make Davante Adams look any worse going into 2020. Look, 7's really high, but I know that for you, it's like an enthusiastic 7 for Davante Adams, right? I mean, you're just like all in.
I just think he's proven himself over the last 2 years. And, again, you can say, okay, and this is probably a similar situation, Adam. It wasn't the same length of time, but he was bad in the early part of the season. This is kind of what I go back to with Joe Mixon, feeling out a new coach, feeling out a new system, dealing with, changes. Matt LaFleur's system wasn't really working for Davante Adams. And then when Adams had that monster first half against Philadelphia, imagine if he had played those next 3 games, or was it 4 games? Next 4 games, when he hurt his toe. Because what he did when he came back from the toe injury, when he was consistently getting double digits in targets, he didn't have a double digit target game in his first 3 outings before that Philadelphia game, and that all came in the first half. And so I think it was a matter of, okay, Rodgers knowing Valdes-Scantling, I liked him a lot last year, didn't pan out. Geronimo Allison, no longer part of the team, didn't pan out. Alan Lazard, maybe. We'll see how he does, but I don't think he's got a superstar level to him. Maybe Jay Sternberger does, but it's a lead singer and a bunch of backup dancers, right now for Davante Adams. And if the targets can continue to be there, he was better than Michael Thomas on a per-game basis the year before. I would not be surprised if he's there now. And, again, factoring that slow start, he was still on a per-game, on an average fantasy points per game basis. He was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the 6th best receiver in PPR last year, behind Evans, Hopkins, Julio, Godwin, and Thomas in ascending order. So I think he's, a better chance to score 10 plus touchdowns maybe than any other receiver. If you had to put money on it, I think he's got a chance to be around 100 catches. I think he's got a chance to be 1,500 yards. So we've had this conversation before. I know you brought it up briefly on the air. I would not be surprised if he's better than Thomas. I've toyed with the idea of putting him ahead of Thomas. It's just so hard to bet against Michael Thomas and what he does in PPR. But in non-PPR, I think the touchdowns could matter for Davante Adams in his offense, and I think he might be better.
Is he your number one wide receiver in non-PPR?
No, I haven't made that switch yet, but it's something every time I look at my rankings, I go, oh, maybe this is the day.
Okay. Here's the case against Davante Adams. Matt LaFleur is potentially a very run-heavy coach. We don't exactly know. He's been a coordinator or a coach 3 seasons, and, it was 1 with the Rams, or he was a quarterback coach. Right. McVay calls the plays. But they were run-heavy, and they drafted A.J. Dillon. They were obviously run-heavy in Tennessee with Derrick Henry, and they drafted A.J. Dillon, so maybe they're going to try to be the 49ers or something like that. But you've brought it up. They don't have the defense for that, we don't think, anyway, at least the run defense. 6 spots left, and we know who they are, we just don't know the order. It's the big 5 running backs plus Michael Thomas. Well, we go like this in our consensus PPR rankings: Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, Ezekiel Elliott. This is 6-5-4. We're counting down, or are we counting up? No, we're counting down. 6-5-4. Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, Ezekiel Elliott, Michael Thomas is 3, Saquon Barkley's 2, and Christian McCaffrey's 1. Christian McCaffrey's a no-brainer. How difficult is it for you to figure out 2 through 6?
It's difficult I think Dalvin Cook's holdout made it a little bit easier, but I had already moved Kamara ahead of Ezekiel Elliott. So initially it was a little tough between Cook and Kamara. I think the tough part is, where do you put Michael Thomas? Because I think we're going to find that you're going to see a little bit more of a lean, and I think this is the right way, toward running backs in the first 2 rounds. and then kind of take your chances with those round three, round four receivers. So if you are pick 4, 5, 6, you know, do you pull the trigger on Thomas? And that's kind of, I think, for me at least, how low do I put a guy who was so impressive last year but could maybe lose a little bit with Kamara being better, at least being healthy and not having to play through an ankle injury, and the addition of Emmanuel Sanders, which gives them a better number two receiver than they've had than they had last year.
Okay, so following up on Michael Thomas, he was the number eight, well, number in PPR, he was number six wide receiver 2 years in a row. So what changed? Well, got a lot more targets. He had 149 targets in 2017, 147 in 2018. He had 185 targets in 2019. Nobody had ever gotten to 150 targets with Drew Brees in New Orleans. Thomas had been right there 2 years in a row, but 185 was way more than we had seen from anybody with Drew Brees in New Orleans. He had the most targets for any wide receiver since 2015. Sometimes you see these 180 target seasons. They're not always followed up by the same thing. And Drew Brees threw more per game. Well, I'm not even factoring Bridgewater, just Brees, his pass attempts. He threw more per game than he had in either of the previous two seasons. So yeah, I mean, maybe he's more of a 150 target guy. If Michael Thomas is 150 targets, which he had been both in 2017 and 18, right around there, told you, I guarantee 150 targets. Where are you taking him?
Still in the mid first round, but probably after all these backs.
Okay. Why Kamara?
Like right now, I'm looking at our projections. We have him at 162 targets, which would put him, or at least the projections have him, 132 catches, 1,572 yards, and 9 touchdowns. Like, I think that's realistic.
Why put Kamara over Zeke? By the way, is Barkley 2 for you?
It's McCaffrey, Barkley, Kamara, Zeke, Cook.
I mean, Zeke, why not Zeke number 2? 300 carries last year. He's probably going to have, he and Derrick Henry have got to be the odds-on favorites to lead the NFL in carries, right?
Potentially. I just think, you know, the norm for Zeke in terms of what his receiving totals have been is kind of where I look at, as opposed to what he did 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's going to be, I think 40 to 50 catches is where he's going to live.
He had 54 last year. Kamara has had 81 catches each of his first three seasons, which is a pretty amazing stat, kind of hilarious. Dalvin Cook ends his holdout today. Where would you rank him?
Still same. 5.
Okay. Anything you want to add? I mean, what is it about Barkley that puts him ahead of the others?
Again, I go back to the last three games of the season. You know, what he was able to accomplish. I think he's just a superior talent. I'm just so impressed by him as a player. I do think there are some concerns about what his role will be in the passing game with everybody healthy and Daniel Jones being a mobile quarterback. So that could hurt him a little bit in the same regard as Zeke, where I don't know if he's going to be what we saw from him as a rookie. Is he going to be more of a 40 to 50 catch guy? I think I'd probably take the over on that, but maybe not by much. But I just think that the Giants offense has a chance to be special. Their defense is going to be very, very bad, but that offense could be special. You know, the offensive line should be better with Thomas. I do think Jones in year two will be better. The receiving core, while it may not have a clear-cut number one guy, when you throw in Evan Ingram, that's a pretty good group. And so I think there are going to be chances for them to score. I think there are going to be a lot of high-scoring games where they probably end up losing more so than winning. But, you know, a chance for him to be close to 2,000 total yards is right there again.
You have a $200 auction budget. We're playing in a PPR league. How much should Christian McCaffrey go for, and how much should Saquon Barkley go for?
I mean, both those guys are going to go near 70. I think, you know, you're talking probably 68 to 72 for McCaffrey and, you know, right around 65 for Barkley. Just depending on how much you want to spend for one of those elite level players.
Well, how much better do you think McCaffrey is than Barkley?
I mean, as we saw last year, you know, you don't get 1,000 yards from a running back very often. So he's better. It's just, you know, this team could be really bad. As well. And you have new coach, new coordinator, new quarterbacks, which I don't think is a bad thing. But McCaffrey has shown the ability to run through tackles, run through one up the middle. You know, and I think that's been the knock on him. You know, I'm writing this story for our second edition of the magazine on McCaffrey. And, you know, we spoke to Jerome Bettis, McCaffrey himself, Emmett Smith. You know, I asked a lot of running backs, retired greats and current ones, and they all just glow about what McCaffrey does as a player. And I think the one thing that, you know, you go back to is he told us on CBS Sports HQ that he's an offensive weapon. And, that's kind of what he is. You know, he's just not a traditional running back. You know, his argument was how many receivers get 1,000 yards, you know, and for him to do it at that position, I just think you build the offense around him. He's still young enough and talented enough that he's one of those players that, at a position that, you know, the stars may be, you know, deteriorating a little bit from where they were, but he's still one of the best of the best.
He sure is. He will be the consensus number one. If you don't take him number one, you are gutsy. Let's just say that. Well,
in other formats, you know, 2QB, super flex, you make a case for the quarterback.
No, certainly. Yeah. And, you know, even in non-PPR, it's going to be closer. But 100 catches, Saquon Barkley, you know, since the first, I broke down his catches, since the first eight games of his career, he was like on 100-something yard, something catch. He was on pace to basically break Matt Forte's record and Christian McCaffrey's record. But then they had a bye in week 9, and then since then, it's been a year and a half where Barkley's been like a 62-catch running back per 16 games. So that's kind of what I'm expecting. And McCaffrey's going to have 40 more catches than him. So it's just it's so hard to ignore, and it's going to put a difference in their auction values for sure. Jamie, thank you. Good stuff,
man. I
got
a question for you.
Yeah.
So I did a poll for our Twitch draft for Tuesday night. Which format we should do? Regular PPR draft, regular half PPR draft, super flex, or 2QB?
I voted for half PPR. I believe PPR.
I'm surprised by that.
I think PPR is going to win.
PPR won slightly. Regular PPR draft won slightly. Out of 1,400 votes, 36.4% for PPR, 34.7% for half PPR, 20.3% for super flex, and 8.7% for 2QB. Now, we can combine two of those and do a super flex PPR draft.
We could do that. That's fine. Or we could do a super flex non-PPR draft or half PPR draft.
Super flex non-PPR draft.
No, half PPR.
Well, what do you want to do?
I'd like to do a... I think we should honor the poll. Do PPR.
Honor the poll, just do a regular PPR draft?
Yeah, I guess so.
Boring?
Yeah, a little boring. We do so many of those. No, super flex, man. Super flex PPR.
Super flex PPR?
Yeah.
All right, we'll see.
All right, that's Tuesday night. Tuesday morning, you'll have your sleepers episode, so we look forward to that. I want to thank Dave and Heath for jumping on as well. Remember to check us out, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday, twitch.com/FFtoday. The links are in the episode description. I'm Adam Azer for Jamie Eisenberg. Adios.